Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Cinema Gems. And as always, I'm your host, the Admirable Admiral. And as always, we are in a video store somewhere in your hometown, so come find us. Yes, video stores still exist. And wait, you're probably wondering, yes. Well, right now it's just me talking. But of course, I can assure you that the Honorable Tesla and the Fantastic Miss Frida are chilling out and relaxing from the fallout from this review that we're about to review. But before I make sure that I introduce our wonderful guest, I should introduce our wonderful, amazing co-host, the Butt Maestro. How's it going, buddy? Thank you.
But thanks, Admiral. And yeah, I'm back. We're doing a special episode because we somehow twisted the arm of one of our amazing, incredible, semi-frequent guests. We got GLaDOS back, everyone.
Hello!
Woo!
Now, there wasn't a specific, like, predetermined reason why we wanted GLaDOS on this show, but every once in a while when we have episode that kind of centers around planes, trains, mechanics, bureaucracy of like how an accident might happen, a mishap might happen. GLaDOS is a great person to have kind of in your corner, whispering in your ear, oh, they messed that up. And you're gonna see, at least from my end, how watching this movie with GLaDOS was an extra level of fun.
It's just a hobby of mine to watch those 30 seconds from disaster and like National Geographic civil disasters and YouTube documentaries on things that go wrong. So having a movie about essentially everything going wrong was pure entertainment.
I think your exact response yesterday when I called was, I'm liking this and I want to see more.
Yes, I want to keep watching, but we're having a phone call, so we'll have this phone call, but I want to keep watching.
Exactly. We should mention the title, like, 2 minutes in. It's Dr. Strangelove, guys.
Or,
we learned to stop worrying and love the bomb.
Exactly. 100%.
We totally didn't practice that, of course not.
What a bunch of nerds.
Yeah. I thought that was my job.
I know. I'm aware. I'm just letting the listeners know that y'all are nerds. But that's besides the point. I still love y'all, and y'all are amazing people. So originally, this movie came out January 29th of 1964. So it is the 60th anniversary, and I believe the Butt Maestro and I both have the 40th anniversary special edition DVD. So technically, we have a 20-year-old DVD. So technically, isn't this vintage now?
I guess. It is a black and white movie, so it would be very easy to pass off as vintage.
But the 20th edition anniversary, the 20-year-old DVD, I think, this is just in cars specifically, is now labeled as antique. 20 is antique, I believe.
Okay. So this is antique. Yep, I'm so glad. Because you know why? I'm ready to get into this. So, let's start off. This is an alternate version of history. Just, let's start saying that completely right now.
It is a black comedy.
Literally.
A series of absolutely absurd situations that isn't too unrealistically implausible. This is a movie that is a little bit scary while also being pretty silly.
I'll tell you right now, this movie does not pass the Bechdel test at all.
100%. No, this movie was very much made by men, making fun of men.
Yes.
Making fun of a very patriarchal system.
So while it doesn't necessarily pass the Bechdel test, I will say at least it is self-aware enough to know that it is a movie about men, written by men, making fun of fragile masculinity, of any... It's, he's self-reflective, poking fun.
It's basically...
You have to be able to laugh at yourself.
It's very well put. I'm just saying that. Very well put. But I guess the other reason is it's the sheer archetype of masculinity for America. And it's shown a different lens in a way. It's showing like a peek behind the curtain. Like, yeah, these men think that they run and do everything correctly and all that. But hey, they're as fragile as we are.
Human error is the downfall of not just this movie, but just about any disaster, natural disaster even. Even things that are quote-unquote act of God, it's still human error. The human element is the greatest flaw of humanity.
Made me want to go back and watch Parasite again.
I also think this is...
All of that is what Stanley Kubrick basically told, like, all of this cast from top to bottom, but especially George C. Scott as General Bob Turgeson and Peter Sellers as the... I counted four characters
Three.
Group Captain Lionel Mandrake, the President, and Dr. Strangelove.
Yes, which I feel that the on Her Majesty's Royals Air Force, I felt that was a little bit on the nose of being a parody of Inspector Clouseau.
I mean, I think that's the whole reason they got him in particular for this movie. And if anything, they probably had to tone down, A, the number of characters he wanted to play, and B, how absurd they probably were when he first pitched those characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
I can only imagine Stanley Kubrick having to constantly get George C. Scott to turn it up, meanwhile having to constantly get Peter Sellers
to turn it down. I could easily see that.
So,
of the three characters that Peter Sellers plays in this movie, Group Captain Lionel Mandrake is by far my favorite. He's just so, like... He's the only good-hearted person that you really see in this movie.
And he has to answer to the Coca-Cola company?
He does insist at the end of the movie that Carl Patton-Wano, if that is really your name.
I laughed so hard. So hard.
I just want to be sure I understood the base where this took place. That's in Arizona?
I don't know if they ever really specify.
I don't know if they specify a geographical location.
Then GLaDOS' headcanon is that base is in Georgia.
Why?
Because that's where Coca-Cola's based.
Okay.
Not a sponsor.
Okay. So before we go any further, can we talk What's about... Isn't that Pepsi? Isn't that Pepsi? Dr. Pepper?
No, Dr. Pepper is...
its own independent company, but bottled at Coca-Cola facilities.
Okay, perfect. Let's talk about Stanley Kubrick for a minute, okay?
Yeah.
This is his seventh film installment where he directed. I've seen Path of Glories with Kirk Douglas about World War One. That is a beautiful movie. That is gorgeous. Like, literally gorgeous. Spartacus is very well done. 2001 A Space Odyssey. 2001 A Space Odyssey. I'm sorry, I don't understand it.
I think that's the point. I don't think you're supposed to understand 2001 A Space Odyssey.
A Clockwork Orange. Probably my favorite, and then followed by another really good one, Barry Lyndon, then The Shining.
I'd argue A Clockwork Orange is the one that you're probably not supposed to understand, actually, now that I think about it.
Oh, see, I like the whole, I've read the book, and all the droogs, they have literally, at the end of the book, a list of vocabulary words that's written for the book. They should have done that in the movie, but...
There are so many books that need that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And that's why I love that movie so much, is because it just throws you in. It's just like, here.
That is incredible. I appreciate. Thank you for that fun fact.
Yep.
Three official terms.
Yep.
Every work official needs that.
Yep. And then you got Full Metal Jacket, which is good, but that's two different movies. I'm sorry. Yes, I know that's a very popular opinion.
It's two different movies, and the first half of that movie, in my opinion, is much more intense.
Yeah, and the second part is a comedy. That's... Yeah. And then you get Eyes Wide Shut, which is weird as hell, but...
Very weird.
Really weird. So technically, I feel like me and Eric Praline reviewed Eyes Wide Shut for the Christmas movie for that year, by the way.
Oh, thank God you already did it. I don't have to watch Eyes Wide Shut. I was not going to make GLaDOS watch Eyes Wide Shut. It's freaking weird.
No one should be made to watch Eyes Wide Shut. No one. But by the way,
are you going to mention technically his last written movie, AI, Artificial Intelligence?
Well,
directed after his passing by Steven Spielberg.
Well, technically, Eyes Wide Shut is the last one that he had any like deal with, because he co-wrote it, he directed it, and he produced it, and it was released after his death. So I didn't. He doesn't really have anything who... and by the way, he also worked on a Bond movie, The Spy Who Loved Me.
Ooh.
Yep.
Just as a writer or producer?
As an unaccredited light designer.
Interesting.
Yep.
Standout elements of most of his movies, including but not limited to Dr. Strangelove, is very
lighting.
Mm-hmm. Very unique situational lighting, highlighting parts of people's faces in very specific ways.
And that's very difficult to do with black and white movies, and it's difficult to translate it, which is why IMDb will always be upset that they colorized What a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, look, that movie's supposed to be in black and white. I'm sorry. I'm a purist.
Thank you. Thank you.
Pure.
She agrees.
And I genuinely think Dr. Strangelove benefits greatly from being shot in black and white, because he plays with the lighting in these scenes so spectacularly well.
But I also view it that the reason it's in black and white is because it's a government file.
Ooh.
It's a simulated what-if scenario.
It's black and white. If you're reading a report about this incident, about any documents, anything, it's black and white. There is no interpretation. This is what happened.
Yeah.
Yep. I just want to clarify that Artificial Intelligence was dedicated to Kubrick, who originally was to direct the film, but I think he maybe helped. I think somebody else did. Kathleen Kennedy produced it.
Okay.
And John Williams did the music for AI.
Oh, I knew that. You wrote a fantastic score for it.
I think it was just an original idea that he had to do. But it was dedicated to him as well.
Gotcha.
But back to Dr. Strangelove and the government file. Also, this movie has a 98% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I can fully believe that.
I'm actually impressed that it's maintained throughout how long... I mean, granted, I know the movie came out before Rotten Tomatoes, but for how long this movie has been around and how many generations we've had watching it, I'm impressed with a 98 for that.
I mean, well, I think Empire Strikes Back also has a 98.
And that I can get behind. I feel like I've heard more divisive opinions about Dr. Strangelove because Engineer Dad loves it, IMDb, not the biggest fan of it. So when I'm watching it, I'm sitting here just enthralled by the entire thing. I can understand why some people wouldn't necessarily understand the humor or the pacing of it. I can get that, but I am impressed that it has been able to maintain a 98%.
Yeah.
I think it was worth it, to be honest with you. It's really well done.
I'm agreeing with the 98.
In my opinion, if I may kind of try to explain that 98% maintaining, the more real-world government reminiscent of this movie, the funnier this movie gets.
That's an accurate description. By the way, did you see Baby James Earl Jones?
Yes. Yes! I didn't even have to point it out to Gladys. Gladys recognized his voice immediately.
Patron didn't realize face-wise, but as soon as she heard his voice, she's like, is that him? I was like, yep. I was like, that's him?
Absolutely.
That's him. All right, so Peter Sellers. I love all of his characters, but the one I quote the most is probably the president. Gentlemen, there's no fighting in a war room. What are you doing?
I adore how the president handled conversations with the Russian czar. I, honest to God, I have seen real-world adults who do not like each other have conversations like that. It's so well written. I agree, Admiral. I love the president. I love his dialogue. I love his lines.
This movie was nominated for 4 Academy Awards. Do you want me to list out which? I'm going to list out which one, and then I'm going to do one of them, and I'm going to let y'all guess. Okay.
So they were nominated for 4, but they only won 1.
No, they won none. It was nominated for Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
It was nominated for Best Director.
Mm-hmm.
It was nominated for Best Writing Screenplay Adapted on Material from Another Medium. Oddly specific.
Yes, it was.
Okay.
And then, obviously, you know who that is. That's Stanley Kubrick, right? So, Best Actor in a Leading Role. Who do you think was nominated?
If it's not Sellers.
I have three in mind. It's either Peter Sellers, George C. Scott, or Sterling Hayden, General Jack T. Ripper.
It's Peter Sellers.
Yes!
It doesn't specify for which role? Because, I mean...
Yes.
He's Peter Sellers.
Because Peter Sellers. Yes.
Wait. I really wish he would have won because they would have had to specify what role.
Would have been nominated.
Now you have to pick which major role he won for Best Actor in a Lady Role. That's hilarious.
Yep.
That would have been as absurd as so many things in this movie, as delightfully absurd as so much in this movie.
Delightfully absurd. That is a great description.
That's a third album of a.
Delightfully absurd. That's the real experimental album.
Yeah. But it did win 2 BAFTAs. It won a BAFTA for Best British Film, and Best Film from Any Source. That's also really weird. You know what? I just want to get out there. Let's talk about the music. Can we please talk about the music, please?
So, there is very limited use of scoring in this movie, but the composer, Laurie Johnson, did a lot with a little bit. Yet, that one song in the very beginning of the movie, the one iconic song at the very end of the movie, and in between, you kind of a theme and variations on Anthem Marching 2x2, aka When Johnny Comes Marching Home, that is mostly used as a kind of ticking clock. As the song intensifies and grows and grows and crescendos more, that kind of builds the intensity and the urgency of, like, oh, the plane with the bombs is now the only plane with the bombs, and it's getting closer. No, it might be safe. No, it's diverting course to the next nearest target. It's throwing everyone off. This is happening. And I think Laurie Johnson, again, does a lot with a little. And I think that's in no small part to the kind of insane brilliance of Stanley Kubrick, who most of his movies, I want to say, use some kind of pre-made music.
More of a soundtrack as opposed to a score.
Right. It's usually an assembly of other pieces, He famously used also Sprach Zarathustra by Richard Strauss for 2001 Space Odyssey. He has done a brilliant and kind of diabolical theme where he reassociates a already popular piece of music and makes you go, no, 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 no. Every time you think about that piece of music, you're going to think about my movie.
Recontextualize the original purpose or written purpose for the song.
100%. I no longer think of this as a Civil War song or a nursery rhyme. This is Dr. Strange's love. This is impending doom.
See, well, that's what Kubrick would want you to do, because he's a perfectionist, or yes. Was. And also, I just want to specify that Laurie Johnson, he did pass away in January of this year.
Oh.
Yeah, at 96.
No, I love the theme and variations all when Johnny comes marching home in this movie. It works brilliantly, because having any kind of score in any of the other big, intense dialogue scenes, and maybe it's because I've seen this movie so many times that the scenes just feel perfect with just the dialogue and just the ambient sounds in the rooms.
It is suspenseful. By having nothing there, you don't feel as though nothing is missing because of how intense and how pulled in you are to the scene. You don't listen to classical background scores in a war room. You're listening to the absolute silence when nobody has a good idea.
In the very incredibly simplistic ways that Kubrick plays around with sound design, especially in the war room, where the microphone, the main source of audio capture, is almost never right by the actor who's speaking. It's almost always on the other side of the room. So you get the size and scale of what is supposed to be a huge, bombastic room just in the sound design.
Lots of practical use to set the tone, set the scene, and be able to translate that across camera and microphones.
100%.
Once again, that's what Kubrick would want you to do, because he is a perfectionist. He loves to subvert everyone's expectations and make you, as you said earlier, recontextualize the film from a certain point of view.
Yes.
That's why he is an amazing director. He is an amazing director.
You just mentioned subversion from his perspective. Can I ask you and but my show a question about your personal opinion? There is no right or wrong answer, but personal opinion about the ending of the movie.
Well,
only because I noticed one thing. I noticed one thing at the very end.
What you notice is it's always been a little bit of a question mark in my mind. They kind of leave it up to who knows what happened.
The Russian spy, the ambassador,
yeah,
ends up, as all the Americans are fighting about whether or not we're living underground and who gets to live underground and all the fallout, goes over and takes a picture of the big board.
Just as General von Turgeson had accused him of doing like an hour earlier.
But if the doomsday device really did exist, he's dying.
Yeah.
Everyone is. Why would you need to take a picture of the big board? So my question to the two of you is, were the Russians lying? Was there ever a doomsday device?
Well,
that's a great question that I've been asking myself since the first time I saw this movie.
Is it okay if I go first, but Maestro?
Please.
So I would say that just like during the Cold War, obviously this is as we said earlier, a black comedy of the Cold War.
Absolutely.
It is just big men showing, oh, look what I got. Oh, look what I got. It's all talk.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's all talk. But later after that, you see atomic blasts go off. Multiple atomic blasts go off. And I guess the other thing I have to say is that I have to, Full stop on this. I know that there is a alternate ending that they were going to release, but
really?
Yes. But into different events, they took it out and put this as a kind of open-ended thing. Would you like to hear about it, or but Maestro, would you like to put in your two cents?
Please, I don't know about this alternate ending.
Okay, so You remember how they were fighting in the war room and the president stopped them? Behind them, there was a giant buffet of food, right?
Yes.
Cakes, pies, correct?
Yes.
So when the ambassador of Russia was taking pictures, George C. Scott's character saw him, ran over, grabbed a pie, threw it at his face. Then the ambassador takes a pie off the table, throws it at George C. Scott. George C. Scott ducks. It hits the president. Okay? So everything starts going off. Literally, there is pie everywhere. It is a pie fight. It is a amazing scene that is never made it out of the editing bay. There is still... The reason they didn't release it is that George C. Scott grabs Peter Sellers, who's president, and says he was struck down in the prime of his life by an assassin.
And they already had to change one line in the movie from Dallas to Vegas, so there was no way they were going to allow that to fly.
Because, as we know, what, 4 months? 4 months before? Not even that, 2 months before? John F. Kennedy was assassinated.
What?
Yeah.
So,
okay. All right.
That's why they changed it.
But
you gotta give Stanley Cooper and production team on this movie some credit. They did a very dark comedy while still doing their best to be tasteful within a degree.
It is so hard to walk that tightrope, and they performed across it.
They performed. Absolutely. They performed admirably. Like,
100%.
Now, am I upset? Oh, 100% upset. I would love to see that. I can, I believe Butt Maestro, if you look maybe on the DVD on the second disc, they might have stills, but I know you can find them on the internet. I highly suggest looking them up because they are amazing. It is really great. But it's literally it devolves into a pie fight. And Stanley Kubrick was also like, I don't really like this tone shift that they went with. So they cut that all out and ended ambiguously, which I don't mind. I just know a lot of people don't like it.
I'm not going to say I didn't like the ending, because I'm usually a type of person, especially in high school when I had to read Life of Pi, I threw that book across the room.
That's my favorite ending chapter. That's my favorite story you've ever told, by the way, is that.
I still, to this day, am reeling over that book, Life of Pi. Don't read it if you don't like ambiguous endings. Don't read it.
I think this is one of those situations where an ambiguous ending works, though.
Yes. It's already brought on conversation just between the three of us.
Right.
Even if we don't agree with the different interpretations of the ending, we all three are sitting here agreeing with the ending.
Yeah.
So, they truly tiptoed across that fine line of ambiguous but still enough to tell the story. I am truly impressed with this movie.
I'm glad. I'm glad you liked it. Do you want to talk about Tracy Reed? I guess I would say the only woman in this film, and she is a secretary, and she gets vital information from the government. And it's just like, oh yeah, just give it to her. Yeah.
Yeah. Having previous experience as a receptionist, there are things that you learn, and yeah, sure, you can talk about security clearance and this, that, and everything, but at a certain point, if you've got to talk to somebody, you have to talk to the receptionist or the secretary. Be nice to them, and they'll get you what you need.
Okay.
Her role is a lot more important than you realize.
I just personally felt that it gave away vital information from the government, but I guess from your perspective, from your point of view, I can understand.
Well, no, it is absolutely ridiculous. ridiculous that they are just giving this much information, shouting it halfway across a hotel or motel room. That is ridiculous, and that's what adds to it. Yes, secretaries sometimes do get intel to top secret information, but they're not going to sit here on the phone translating from one end of a motel room to the other. So it's just enough truth with just enough of that obscurity.
Okay.
I also think, Admiral, I think it's a little bit unfair to accuse Miss Scott, played by Tracy Green, played brilliantly by Tracy Green, of being the kind of catalyst of breach of information in this movie, and irresponsible handling of information in this movie, as long as Brigadier General Jack D. Ripper exists. Because, look, every shot in this movie is its own little joke. Every single shot is its own little joke. Every character is its own joke wrapped up in a person. All of this happens because his junk stopped working. Everything in this movie, all of the chaos that ensues, and the nuclear fallout that might or might not happen at the end of it, all happened, all spiraled out of control, because General Jack D. Ripper, his junk stopped working. That's all it took. The biggest criticism in this movie is that of fragile masculinity.
Oh, I 100% agree with you. I was just going over the aspect of the vital information from the government. Not because she was a woman, but just because it was given to a secretary. But I also 100% agree with what you just said. I just want to specify that I am not basing it on that. I'm just vital information. Vital information.
You saw the obscurity of it in the moment, and while it has some truth space behind it, yes, it is absolutely obscure for secretaries to be shouting top secret.
Correct.
So I appreciate you picking up on that. That is correct. Again, tiptoed that line so damn well.
Yeah. And also, so Dr. Strangelove is secretly my favorite. Let's be honest. The character, Peter Sellers' character, out of the three, secretly my favorite. The one I send boxes to in college. I'm like, here you go, bud. Here you go. So the glove that he wore
yes.
was from Stanley Kubrick's personal collection.
Really?
Yes. And he wore it on the hand, that was not under his control.
Yes.
And I love that it was very ambiguous to whether it was mechanical or whether it had a mind of its own or whether it was conflicted about what the owner of said hand was doing.
Him and he's smoking the cigarette. One hand wants to smoke it and the other is trying to take it away. Very, very small detail that if you don't pay attention, you don't understand the big kind of ending reveal. I greatly, greatly appreciated that nuance.
Yeah.
So what psychologically is Dr. Strangelove's deal? Is he a split personality because he's trying to undo his Nazisms from when he worked with the Nazis? Is he... I never understood.
Okay, I have That's... a theory.
Okay.
A film theory.
Okay, go ahead.
It's not a good one, because it's based in reality.
Go ahead.
What, that the U.S. government hired former Nazis?
Project Paperclip?
And that's why we won the space race, is because we took the German scientists. Do you know what the German scientists were doing before they were American?
Making nukes.
No.
Experimenting
on human bodies.
Yep.
Because they had an abundance of
abundance of human
mm-hmm.
bodies.
So, yep. That's literally, in my opinion, the result of an experiment done on himself from that time. And yes.
Now.
Yes.
Was it all of his appendages, or was it just... Because he can't walk.
I think he stood at the end
very surprisingly to himself.
Yeah.
Surprised himself with how he stood up.
So maybe he reached the conclusion, and all of his parts were like, hey, you actually did something good for once. Great job on making everybody understand what we need to do. Oh, you can walk now. And then yells out really loudly.
It might be guilt tied.
Because throughout the entire movie, y'all said it, his body is constantly fighting him.
Yep.
More than our bodies typically betray us. His body is actively, constantly fighting his will.
I'm also sorry, I laughed so hard that it was his right hand. I laughed so hard.
Right. Correct.
Because of our right hands.
Both of our right hands are currently injured.
Oh, you decided to join the party, Admiral?
It's been like this for a while. It's fine.
To this brain.
Yeah.
From writing too much information for the podcast.
Exactly. And so also, I know you can't see it, but Stanley Kubrick specifically made the tablecloth in the war room green. Even though you can't tell because it's a black and white movie, because he wanted to make it like a poker game of the world, and the world was at stakes.
I get it.
Yep.
I get it.
Yep. Oh, and also in with doing all this research and helping write Dr. Strangelove, he read over 50 books of nuclear war.
That's about right. You have to do a lot of research to get as many details as he got right. Any details that he overlooked in terms of military hardware and hierarchical functionality with the military and the government, any details he got wrong on purpose to maintain a sense of plausible deniability in case anything like this actually happened in real life, which the chances of that are not zero.
And also, apparently, there was another version of the script where it zoomed out to the Earth and aliens were watching all this unfold.
That feels more like a Hitchhiker's ending.
Yeah.
It does feel more Douglas Adams.
Yep. And there is one other thing I want to mention. So you're aware that that Stanley Kubrick loves to do multiple takes. Like, that's why Shelley Duvall looks and feels
terrorized in The Shining, right?
Correct. And you know, Peter Sellers doesn't really like to do more than one take because it's Peter Sellers just being himself. Like,
exactly.
Correct. He also, when he came on the Muppet Show, he asked the Jim Henson Company, I will come on the show as long as I don't have to play myself. I will,
yes.
Like, I will literally play anyone else. So, every time Kubrick would do a take, he felt that the performance was improvised each time by Sellers' improvisation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Sellers couldn't understand why Kubrick kept doing takes of the same scene. It's like, we got it, right? Like, what are you doing? And I understand that from a perspective of Peter Sellers, but I also understand that as a perfectionist from Kubrick. He wants the perfection, the finite, that, as we've been saying this entire time, that tightrope walk of a black comedy.
And the more options you have for takes, the better. Because there could be one small detail in this camera, there could be one small detail from this audio. Having as many takes possible, as infuriating as it is for actors who love to improv and will never be able to give you the same take again, the directors also love it. So it's that love-hate relationship. And I'm glad that there was no major animosity between Sellers and Kubrick, though I do know there was some bad blood between Scott and Kubrick because of that.
I mean, it is George C. Scott. Like, it is Patton, so.
Right, and Stanley Kubrick had kind of the audacity to tell this incredibly high highly trained, very classically trained actor, hey, go as absurd as possible. No, don't worry, we're not recording it. Okay, cool, that's a wrap, that's the take we're going to go with.
Yeah. Which, Patton came out in, what, the 50s, right?
I believe so.
I don't know if it's me, but sometimes George C. Scott fades into obscurity in this role because I differentiate him and Patton because they are two wildly different characters, and I feel that George C. Scott is lost in this role, if that makes sense.
Also feel like George C. Scott was perfect for this role because only George C. Scott could play a direct parody of Patton.
Yep.
Or that kind of general.
I can see that. I can see it from that perspective as well.
Before we get into the final gem rating for this episode, I know GLaDOS had something for this episode, kind of a bingo card, right?
Oh yeah. So I like to watch civil engineering failure documentaries. I mean, anything that could possibly go wrong with life. And there's sometimes a little bingo card that I like to play along with that. And it's just things that typically happen in real-world disasters, you know, not to say that this couldn't potentially be one day, but, you know, you've got things like no training or botched safety, you've got risks ignores, fatigue, complex systems, shift change. So I went through the bingo card, and let's just say that the entire bingo card was filled out from this movie, except for four spaces.
Oh, I thought we had a full blackout.
No, unfortunately, because this is the military, so there is training. We can't say there was no training.
Okay.
There is training. Cost cutting. Once again, this is the military. We have the six large... I can't give that to them. They spend the most money. Recently inspected. Well, no, I can't give it that because nothing was really inspected. And then fatigue.
We didn't see a whole lot of... We saw... If the movie would have gone on longer, if, say, that bomber had to be in the air for longer than it was, the longer we saw it, they would have been pressing on the team. Same with the men that were. But not quite. I don't think that was one of the main, like, things that... you know, spiral this out of control.
But, I mean, everything else is filled out from overly confident officials, complex system, warning signs ignored, risks ignored, time pressure, temporary fixes, winging it either from operators or from management, easily preventable, botched safety, company blames victim, legacy, infrastructure, and shift change.
You know, I love that it almost got a blackout, but hey, at least it's still won bingo.
Oh, it got four bingos on the card. Diagonal top and two sides.
I mean, that's pretty good. That is really good. So, speaking of fatigue and the juxtaposition from the war room and the plane, I'm going to be honest with you, the plane to me was more anxious than the war room.
I'm more anxious from the war room than I am from the plane, because I know on the plane, everybody has their job. If you do your job on the plane, if you are tracking, if you are vectoring, if you are radar, if you are pilot, everyone's job, if everyone's doing their job, it's fine. Everybody will be taken care of. The war room, they're talking over each other, you can't get a hold of the Russian president, and now you're sitting here saying, don't tell me I'm more sorry than you are. I mean, it's just such coddling. It's coddling of adults versus the plane. No, they have a job. They're doing their job. They're doing their part. They're doing their bit.
Okay. I mean,
It's two different opinions, and I'm not going to say anyone is right or anyone is wrong. It's just an opinion.
Thank you. I'm glad that it's an opinion.
It's an opinion.
Yeah. So I love the last imagery of... oh, what's the gentleman's name? I know his voice more than anything. The one who rode the bomb down.
Major King Kong.
Yeah.
King Kong. Yeah.
Like.
And his real name is, it's It's like a verb. Yep, it's a verb.
It is a verb. I love that as soon as he got the orders, he put on his cowboy hat. Like, he was just like, let's go. Let's go.
This is what we trained for.
Yep.
I'm not going to disobey an order. This is what I was told. Let's go.
Yep. And it's interesting.
In the war room, they're sitting down there arguing back and forth about, well, is this really happening or is that? No, that's not. It's fact. On the plane, they said go, so they go.
Yep. I just like it in general, the fact that the bomb is stuck and the pilot inadvertently has to go down with the ship, in a way.
Yeah, he is the leader on that plane. It is his role to get it done, get it working, and
he goes out in a big yeehaw, blazing glory.
Yep. Yeah. I'm just really glad he didn't lose his hat. Like,
I was a little bit worried about the hat.
A real cowboy would not let his hat go.
No, not at all. Okay. All right. No, I just wanted to specify we didn't talk that much about the airplane sequence, so I wanted to specify that because we did talk about the war room. But I also love that they can't get in touch with the airplane because it's broken. I was like, of course it is. Of course.
Everything that goes wrong, that could go wrong, goes wrong.
Exactly.
It's such a we promised this is where the plane is targeting. The target, that this is the primary, this is the secondary, just cover those areas. And then the plane says, no, actually, we're losing fuel, so we're going to go over here. It's just so many different small layers of the domino effect of possibilities. It's infuriatingly obscure, and I love it.
Yep.
Because so much of this happens in real life, guys. Like, seriously, go look up what happened with the Challenger mission and why that was.
Yep.
So many different parts of the Challenger mission might as well be parodies from this movie.
Right.
So, here on Cinema Gems, we have a rating system. Full Gem is an amazing movie. Half Gem is an all right movie. No Gem, a horrible movie. But Maestro, I'm going to push you back and let GLaDOS go with, what do you give Dr. Strangelove or How to Stop Worrying About the Bomb and Loving It from 1964?
How I learned to stop worrying and love the bomb. Sorry. I'm with you, Admiral. It is very tough to get the whole title.
Thank you.
I'm going to go with one full nuclear diamond. I mean, how can you not? Or was it Cobalt G?
Cobalt Thorium G.
Yes, one Cobalt Thorium G gem.
Cobalt Thorium G.
I'm sorry, but I'm holding back my laughs because I want y'all to talk. Thank you. Thank you. That is the best description you can give this gem rating for this movie. I totally agree. But Maestro, what do you give it?
I give this movie a whole glass of rainwater and pure grain alcohol.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Oh, no.
We must preserve the vitality of our precious bodily fluids.
No.
Okay, I'm going to kind of veto that and specify that I give this a one whole pie gem to the face.
Yes! Yes, good gem. Good gem rating.
Well done. Before we go any further, thank you, GLaDOS, for coming on and discussing this movie. Yes, thank you so much
for having me, and thank you for finally really twisting my circuits to watch this movie. I can't believe I waited this long. It was so much fun.
Thank you for taking a little bit of time out of your very busy schedule of constantly overanalyzing things and building redundancies for your partner.
And also, the movie wasn't that long. It was shorter than I remember. It's only an hour and a half.
I was not expecting that. It flew by. I just wanted to keep watching. I just wanted to keep going. Tell me what's next. What else goes wrong? Yes, please do go on.
Very efficient with this time.
Yep. And also, guys, we just want to go ahead and specify to thank you to Marty and the Arrogant Observer for allowing us to be on your website, lowrangpictures.com. Also, Kevin George, thank you for letting us use your music. And also, guys, remember to go onto the Your 30 tab on lowrangpictures.com. And please go give Marty and the Arrogant Observer a like and a listen, because they're a wee bit better than we are. I know I am aware that they haven't released anything in a while, but you should, you know, poke at them and let them know, hey, start doing stuff. But guys,
do something.
Exactly.
Exactly.
But guys, the reason that how you can get in touch with Cinema Gems is cinemagems15@gmail.com. That is cinemagems15, the number 15 at gmail.com. Please let us know what you thought about our review for Dr. Strangelove. Tell us if you like our deconstructualization of reviews and not talking about plot point by plot point, or if you hate that or anything. Let us know. We want to be the podcast. Exactly.
Recipes, movie recommendations, we'll take it all.
We want to be the podcast that you want to listen to, a great person once said. But Maestro, take it away.
Thank you, as always, to our amazing Swapper Jacks friends and family members and our amazing Cinemaniacs who constantly give us inspiration and feedback. Keep it coming, please. We love you all so much. Take care of yourself so you can then take care of others, please.
Yes, because self-care is sexy.
Yes, it is.
I agree with that, and I think the dogs are holding their paws up as they're agreeing as well. Guys, just make sure you take some time for take time for yourself before you can help others. You cannot care for anyone unless you take care of yourself first. And also, guys, just make sure that, you know, take some time to really think about everything that's going on in the world, because, guys, we really need peace and accountability in the Middle East. Like,
yes, sir.
We really do. We really do. It should not be going on this long. Like, it should stop. But we are reviewers. We are not anything else. I guess reviewers.
Commentary to a minimum, but, like, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know the basic principles of being a decent human being.
Exactly. And guys, also remember to wipe your hooves and see you later. But remember, Black Lives always matter, guys.
Love y'all.
Bye, guys. See you later.
Meet again. Don't know where.
Don't know where.
And also, guys, you can't fight in this recording studio.